Hi, my name is Michelle Watterson, the Karate Hottie, and you're watching Hollywood Reel with Jay Menez.
Michelle, I've been looking so forward to doing this ever since we met in Las Vegas, and now I have you here in LA with your family, my man Joshua over there. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. Yes, we're very excited. Already getting into it.
All right. So I want to kind of set the stage and go back to the early years, Okay. Your family and the early interest in martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Well, so my dad was in the military. My parents met when he was in Germany. My mom was fleeing Thailand from like an abusive relationship with her young son. So she went to Germany and had some friends there. And my dad actually was hospitalized for something. And my mom ended up taking care of my dad. And, you know, they fell in love and had me and my little sister. We ended up moving out to, I was born in the Springs, Colorado Springs. And then we moved to Aurora, Colorado. So it was the three of us kids growing up in Aurora, Colorado. And, you know, middle class family, I would say blue collar. And we wanted to get into sports, but we just couldn't, like, my parents just couldn't afford to put all three of us into sports. So there was a community church just down the street, and they taught martial arts. And there was a flyer on the door that my brother had found. And at that point, Ninja Turtles was really popular, Mortal Kombat, you know, Best of the Best, all of these martial art movies that we were just obsessed with. So when we got that flyer, my brother was just like, please, 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 let us do it. And when they figured that all three of us could join for a decent price and that we could walk there ourselves, it was just down the street, then they put all of us in. And we absolutely fell in love with it. It became a huge part of our lives. We trained as much as we could. If we got in trouble, their discipline was to take karate away from us. So it became a huge part of our lives. And we competed monthly, and we got really good at it. And it took over our lives. And from that moment on, I knew that martial arts was going to be something that was a part of my life for the rest of my life.
Were you as competitive back then, like with your siblings?
I think what I would say is that I was competitive. I've always been competitive with myself, in the sense of, like, I'm sure you probably experienced this. A lot of Asian parents, the way that they motivate their children is through negativity. I don't know if that's true with you. Is that true with you? Because my mom would be like, you got an A minus. What is this A minus, huh? And like would compare me to some of her friends' children and tell me that, oh, well, they're doing good, you know? So my mom would always kind of, you know, compare me, and I always wanted to prove her wrong. I always wanted to prove that I could do this, that I could do that, you know? So yes, I was competitive in that way. If there was something that I had a hard time doing, then I wanted to work at it until I mastered it with whatever it was. And so that's just always been my personality. In martial arts, I thought that when I first started competing, I would really like the sparring aspect of it. And I remember one of my first tournaments, I'm always the smallest one, you know. So they pair you up based on your belt level. They don't pair at a young age. It's not about how big you are or what you weigh. It's your belt level. So no matter the size of the other person, if we were both white belts, then we were paired up. And I think that's when I realized how competitive I was, because I remember getting knocked down on my butt and the girl giving me a bloody nose. And, you know, my parents were just standing there kind of eager as to, like, what I was going to say or do. And I remember, like, wiping my nose and seeing the blood and just being, like, so fired up about it that I didn't even care how hurt I was. I just wiped the blood off and got back in the center of the mats and was like, all right, let's go. Like, I wanted to get my points back.
How old were you then?
Probably like 10 or 11.
Wow. So that brought up something really primal in you.
Yeah.
Like you see the blood and all of a sudden it's like, ah, I'm fired up.
I think so. I think it's that fight or flight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Some people have the instinct to want to fight and some people have the instinct to want to flee the scene, to not be a part of that. And I'm a fighter, you know?
Yeah. I've heard you talk before about kind of this mental switch where you turn as like the vicious Michelle,
mm-hmm.
I think is the way you put it.
Yeah.
Is that where that all came from or did that develop over time or over your career?
You know, it's probably a mixture of both because in fighting, you know, you have to be. That's your job. It's either you or the other person across the cage from you. And if at any moment you're hesitant about your intentions to what you're going to do to your opponent, then you can lose. And I have. And it's because I hesitated, or it's because in that split second of time, I was humanized. You know, I had compassion, and I am a very compassionate person. But when you step into the cage or you step into the ring or whatever it is that you decide to do, you have to commit fully.
Well, tell me about that. Is that more of you turn into a different person, like an alter ego? Or is it just a different objective?
I don't think it's a different person. I think it's the same me.
Yeah.
I just think it's a different part of me that is that I don't get to explore on an everyday basis, you know?
So what are you thinking when you're facing off with that person? Is it, this is another competitor that I have to win the points of? Or is this like, I've got to kill this person? I want to take their head off or whatever.
I would say, if I make it personal, then I'm going into it with the wrong mindset. I can't make it personal. I have tried, and it doesn't work. Because, like I said, I'm not a mean person at heart. So anytime I step into the octagon, it has to be for reasons to improve myself. And I try to explain this to people that it's like, it literally is me battling myself and some of the fears and the doubts that I have put upon myself. And, you know, there's a lot of, we were talking about it earlier, there's a lot of self-talk that you have within your mind. And a lot of it is like self-doubt. You can't do this. You're not meant to do this. Are you trying to be somebody that you're not? And those are all these voices that are in your head that end up popping up for who knows what reason. But those are the voices that I'm fighting when I'm in the octagon. It's not like a literal, I'm fighting these words. It's more of me trying to be in the moment and trying to allow myself to let my skills and abilities take over and become me. I don't know if that makes any sense, but mm-hmm. If you are having a conversation with yourself in your head while you're competing, then you're already a step behind. You shouldn't be having a conversation. You shouldn't be thinking about what you're going to do to your opponent. You should be doing.
So more reflexive.
More being, more in the moment.
Got it. I want to come back to that, but real quick, you'd mentioned that when you tried to make it personal, it didn't work for you. What happened there? What is it that didn't work specifically?
Well, I was angry, and I felt like this person across the cage from me was judging me and was putting a stereotype on me that didn't belong. Oh, well, she's just this pretty girl, the karate hottie who doesn't belong in here. I'm going to smash her face in, you know. I got that a lot at the beginning of my career, and I was resentful for those comments. And when I got into the cage and I was upset that they thought these things about me, I wanted to prove them wrong. And maybe that part of that is something that followed me through my childhood. But when I was that angry, it stifled me, because instead of my allowing my skills to flow out and be organic, I was so angry that I wanted to just, you know, finish this person off, and I couldn't because I was so stifled with anger, and it hindered me from performing how I can, you know. I don't know.
A lot of fighters pre-fight, especially in boxing, there's a lot of crap talking going back and forth, especially publicly in the in the media. Did you get a lot of that in your career?
No, I'm not. I just, like I said, I'm not that way, and I know that it's beneficial to be that way for the public. They like to see the drama. They want a story, because usually that's why people get into fights. It's because there's a story. It's like, well, I don't like them because of this, and now we're gonna fight. We're gonna hash out our differences through this physical, you know, match. But that, again, that's not why I do martial arts. I do martial arts to improve myself, to overcome these internal challenges that I have for myself. But I wish I was better at it, because I know that I'm a martial artist, but I am also a fighter for the UFC. And people tune in to watch the UFC because at the end of the day, it's entertainment. So I've just come to the realization that I'm not a good shit talker. And if I tried to shit talk, I would be horrible at it, and it would come off as ingenuine. Like, it wouldn't be true to who I am. So I've just kind of chalked it up to just go out there and be you and be honest with yourself. And the people that want to follow your career because of who you are, those are the people that matter anyways.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was getting at, right?
But I wouldn't shy away from questions. Maybe before in the past I would. I would try to be like very politically correct in answering my questions. But if somebody asked me a question about how I felt about my opponent or a certain situation, I would tell them how I feel, you know? I think that's something that I've been able to kind of develop as I've become older. And maybe it's because now that I'm a mother, I feel like it's important to be honest, you know, and hash out your differences truthfully, you know?
Very good. We were talking about kind of that inner game, that inner dialogue. And it seems to me that introverts may have an advantage in that.
Introverts?
Yes.
Do you think?
Because they're very introspective.
Uh-huh.
And they think about these things very deeply. And maybe perhaps more empathetic also. Do you think there's a particular advantage or disadvantage if you're introverted?
How do you know if you're an introvert or not?
I think that introverts recharge by being alone.
Uh-huh.
Extroverts tend to recharge by being around people. They need that stimulus.
Yeah, because I have no problem being around people and socializing and talking and this and that. But like, on the same token, I have no problem being by myself either.
How do you relax when you've had a full day? How do you want to relax? Is it more you want to be around your friends and family and get together? Or would you rather be alone, maybe read in front of the TV or spending a one-on-one time with your family?
Probably that. I'd probably want to be. I do think it is very like emotionally draining to be around a lot of people, especially when you are doing it right and taking the time to actually have genuine conversations and you are actually engaging in the conversation, you know? Yeah.
I think then you probably have introverted tendencies, like I do.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I enjoy this one-on-one format of conversation much better, much more than going to a large party and trying to mingle with, you know, 100 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Well, my sports psychologist, like when I first started working with me, he was like, okay, well, I'll meet you at Starbucks. And I'm like, Starbucks? Like, everybody's going to hear our conversation, this and that. But his idea behind it is that you should be able to have an in-depth conversation with me with all these distractions going on. Because as an athlete, it's not like there aren't distractions going on. You know, there are so many other things going on while you have to get focused. So if you can't get focused in Starbucks, then you're not going to be able to get focused for your fight.
That's an interesting strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how else do you, are there any other tactics you use pre-fight? What sort of pre-fight routine do you have?
I don't really have a routine because I feel like if the routine didn't go the way as planned, then I would like freak out. So I don't, every fight's different. Every moment's different. I'm a different fighter stepping into the octagon than I was the last fight camp. My opponent is a different fighter this fight than they were their last fight. So I can't, I feel like if I had a routine, I would be pigeonholing myself into, you know, I basically like trapping myself in the corner because no fight's ever going to be the same. No routine is ever going to be the same. And if something was off on the routine, then it would just mess with my mind. So I kind of just go with the flow and let things happen. I would say that the thing that comforts me the most is that I've prepared. And you only know, I mean, you can lie to the world and say that you're in the best shape and that you've prepared and that you're ready for the fight, but you were truly the only person who knows if you're ready for the fight. And for me, what gives me the confidence to step into the octagon and fight my opponent is that I've put in the time, that I'm physically and mentally prepared for whatever is to happen, and that I am allowing myself to be in the moment because I've already put in the time.
Very good. I get it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you believe in morning routines?
I believe in them. I think they are.
Nice to have.
I think it's something definitely that you should implement. It's just so hard for me. Our lives are so spontaneous that it's hard to get into a set routine because one, you know, for 8 weeks, I'm in fight camp and I'm pretty routine during those. I'm pretty like military when it comes to staying in my routine during my fight camp. And that's easy. But then when fight's over and now I don't have a goal ahead of me. Now I think that's a little harder because there are a lot of other things that I have to take care of. Then I have to pick up all the slack that I kind of pushed off as a wife and a mother, you know, taking care of things for the house, trying to check things off my list of building my brand, trying to check things off as far as, you know, getting back in touch with my friends and my family. There's just all these moving parts. And I know my husband gets frustrated with me because I have like these checklists and we try to sit down and fix or take, you know, check these things off. But in the way I work, I have like 10 things going on in my mind at once. And the way he works is like, okay, you know, first thing we got to take care of. And so we're sitting down talking and I get up because I realize that I have to go, you know, change a load of laundry. And then I forget about what we're talking about. So then I start cooking breakfast and he's just staring at me like, what are you doing? Sit down. Like, we got to take care of this. But in my mind, I'm taking care of 10 things at once. And in his mind, he wants to take care of one thing at a time. I don't know. What
are you? So you're a bit ADD like the rest of us.
Maybe.
So how do you balance that shift from being this elite MMA fighter to a wife and mom and homemaker?
Well, I would say that a big part of it is that my family is a part of my journey as a fighter. And so, you know, when I am in camp, Josh, my husband, is right there alongside with me. He's actually in my corner been in my corner for the majority of my fights. And so he comes with me to practice. We go on runs together. He holds mitts for me. And he helps me with Araya even though it's a small thing, it's like taking her to school, you know, packing her lunch, helping her with her homework, those small things people don't realize take up a lot of your time. You know, even though it's simple, doesn't mean it's easy. And so, and that's why I don't think, you know, mothers get a lot of credit, because they are very good at multitasking and taking care of the family and the household. And it just goes, it just happens because it needs to, you know. And so I have a huge appreciation for mothers all around the world. But Josh definitely, you know, steps up and helps out with all those little small household chores when I'm in camp so that I can focus. But a big part of it is so that I can recover. Before, when he was having to work full time, I was kind of left with all of those responsibilities, and I did them fine. But what I was having to cut out in order to do those things was my rest and my recovery. And it showed in practice, because instead of showing up to practice at 100% charge, I was showing up to practice at 50% charge because I didn't get any time to rest or recover. And that's important, just as important as training. So, and we were talking about this earlier, like when you were doing your whole bodybuilding stuff, it's like you had to eat a lot and you had to sleep a lot because your body requires that, you know?
Yeah, sure does.
So, Josh helps me during camp. Outside of camp, we're a unit. We do it all together, you know, and I think that's what allows me to get it done, is that Araya knows that this is my dream, and so she's a part of the journey. Josh is a part of the journey, and so we do these things together as a family, and I think by not leaving anybody out, it allows us to knock these dreams down, you know, one by one.
You guys, you and Josh, are certainly lucky to have found each other and be able to support each other and have this kind of this common mission in supporting your career.
Mm-hmm.
and also his career also. What sort of lessons do you hope to pass on to your daughter now and in the future as a result of your career?
I mean, there is a million lessons that I could pass on to her. And I honestly feel like that's one big reason why I still continue to do martial arts and I continue to fight, because I'm forced to deal with these demons or these doubts, these lessons. She comes with me, and people question that, like, are you sure? Like, isn't that strange that you let your daughter come to your fights and watch you fight? Like, aren't you scared that it's going to traumatize her? Because she has seen me badly beaten up and bruised. You know, she's seen me break my hand. She's seen me get busted up. She's seen me get head kicked almost to the point of unconsciousness and then choked out where there's blood squirting out my nose and I'm literally helpless. And yes, it's a hard pill to swallow, but I think it's necessary for her to see those things, because life isn't all sunshine and rainbows, and the majority of the time we are failing. And I don't think enough people see that. Even on social media, everything's edited, everything's photoshopped, everything's when you're having a great day. And that is not the reality of our world. The reality of our world is that we fail 10 times before we succeed. You know, but people want to celebrate the success, which, you know, of course, yes, let's celebrate it. But how did you get there? And I include her in on my journey, because she needs to know the work it takes to get to the success. So I think that's something I would like to pass on to her, is that failure is a part of your journey, and to embrace the process of it and to not let failure stifle you. To not let the failure get in your head, and to just, you can use a failure as a stepping stone, or you can use it as a wall, you know, stopping you from getting to your goal. And so I'd like to see her use failures as stepping stones to get her closer to her dreams. Something else that I'd like to pass on to her is that you can do whatever you want to do in life, but it takes sacrifice, and it takes time, and it takes patience, and it takes consistency. So that's another thing I'd like her to know, and this is why we take her everywhere with us. You know, she's been, you know, to the West Coast. She's been to the East Coast. We've taken her to Mexico. We've taken her to Thailand. We want her to see the world so that it's normal to her. She comes to the gym with me. She sees Holly Holm trains. She sees John Jones train. And these guys are like mega uber superstars in the UFC world, right? In the MMA world. But to her, they're my training partners. So if she sees, you know, being a UFC fighter as the norm, then what are her dreams and ambitions going to be, even higher than mine? And I'd like her to go for them.
Well, that's very interesting. I didn't think about it that way, but you're right. That's a new standard.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we're really unlimited, right? And it's something that I talk about a lot. And we're only limited by our own minds. And most people, that normal is down here. As they mm-hmm. set the bar so low for themselves mm-hmm. and see just a little bit of success as something oftentimes that, how can I ever get there? How yeah. can I get to where Michelle is? But if that becomes the new normal, then it's like, well,
you got to trump that.
I've got to beat that, or yes, I can get there.
Exactly.
So that's a very valuable perspective. How do you think she feels though when she sees you, when you get beat up and when you're hurt? There are lessons there for sure.
I think that her main concern is that I'm okay. You know. And then after that, it's like, well, I remember one time they shuffled me off to the hospital right after my fight, so I didn't even get a chance to see her. But she stayed up because she wanted to see me when I came home. So it was probably 1 o'clock in the morning, and she was up because she wanted to make sure I was okay. And I remember walking into the hotel room, and I could barely see because my eyes were both swollen shut from bruising. And I just remember her looking up at me and kind of staring at me and just looking at me like it wasn't mommy, like I looked different. And she kind of just like grabbed my hand and she's like, "Mommy, are you okay?" And I was like, "I'm fine, baby." You know, I told her, I said, "I'm a little heartbroken, but I'm okay." And then she was like, "Okay." And then she gave me a big hug. And then we went and laid down in the bed. And then it was, you know, kids have no filter, you know. So she's like, "Well, I guess we can't celebrate now since you lost." And I was like, "Yeah, no celebration here. Back to the drawing boards, you know." But right. That's the thing. She wanted to know if I was okay. And then we moved on.
Well, I got to say, you look like you've never been hit in the face in your life, much less two swollen eyes.
Oh, yeah. Three broken noses, huge hematoma, busted lip, busted eyes, broke my hand 4 times.
Wow. The life of a fighter. We were talking about these internal demons that you struggle with,
mm-hmm.
that you perhaps still struggle with. How do you work through that? How do you think about those now?
I think what happens with a lot of us is that we end up talking to ourselves about what we don't want to do. In our minds, it's like, "I don't want to lose, you know? I don't want to get knocked out. I don't, you know, I don't want to be ashamed in front of a million people." And what ends up happening is there are certain words that stick out: lose, you know, knocked out, embarrassed. And our intention is to not have those things happen to us. But the words themselves, I think, speak louder than our intention, you know? So I think it's important to try to reword our thoughts, if that makes any sense.
Totally agree.
But so instead of saying, "I don't want to lose," then I tell myself, "I'm winning," you know? Instead of telling myself that I'm nervous, I tell myself that I'm excited, because those two feelings are pretty much the same thing. Instead of telling myself I'm scared of this challenge, I tell myself that, you know, I'm ready to rise to the occasion. And so I think though that's probably one of the biggest shifts that I've been able to do for myself personally is reword my thoughts. And that's helped a lot. And then with my sports psychologist, his name is William Shandon, and he has an amazing story. He's been a psychologist forever, and he's really helped me put together a game plan for my mental strength that's just as strong as the game plan that I have for my physical strength. And so what we do is we put together, you know, a list of, we call them power words. And so, and we were talking about this earlier, if in the fight you're having a conversation with yourself, then you are no longer in the present moment and you're not able to, you're not able to perform in the present moment. So you can have this conversation with yourself, like, no, don't get hit, move to the left, now it's your turn to throw the punch. And that's like two sentences. and that's two sentences too long. So instead of having these conversations in our head, which are natural, we use power words. And so one of my power words is flow. But within that one word, there's a whole world that lives in that word. You know, it's not just flow. It's how I feel when I'm moving around my opponent. It's how I feel when the bell rings. It's what I think when I throw my punches and I go to take my opponent down and finish the fight. Mm. So it's a whole world, like I said, within one word. So
very powerful.
Yeah.
I can see how that would really make a difference. Are there any other words that you use?
Yeah, I have a good handful of them. Vicious, flow, champion, commit, and they all mean different things. And I can interchange the words, but sometimes just the one word will allow me to be in a certain state of mind.
So instead of having this conversation, it's just that one trigger word.
Yes.
And it kind of sets the stage for and to allow things to happen in the present moment.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that I kind of tried to and want to try to relate to my father-in-law. Some of those same things, you know, is that because it's so easy. It's so easy to get wrapped up into listening to your, you know, your negative thoughts. And it's not done intentionally, but they somehow the negative thoughts overpower the positive thoughts, and that's not a good place to be.
Well, when you have tools like that to overcome it, then eventually it becomes habit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to think about it less. Right?
That's true. But it's that I think the biggest transition is knowing what you have to do and actually applying it. Because we all know what we have to do. We all have access to the best minds in the world. Mm-hmm. Through technology, through podcasts, through video, through social media. We have access to all these things. And it's easy to listen to somebody tell you what you need to do. But it's hard to actually apply it.
For sure.
And I tell this to people all the time that want to get into fighting, is that it's easy to go balls to the walls in training for one day and say, I did that. But try doing that for a week. Try doing it for a month. Try doing it for an eight-week camp. Try doing it for a year. Try doing it for a decade of your career and see, you know what I mean? That's what makes it hard. And I think at the times when you feel like giving up is what distinguishes somebody that is really dedicated and wants to become the champion versus somebody that will give up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And a lot of that comes down to, and this is spoken about a lot, is really what is that why behind it?
Mm-hmm.
So what drives you beyond providing for a family? And is there anything deeper than just this interest in martial arts and what it teaches you?
Well, I mean, if you're going to eliminate family from the picture.
Let's be selfish for a minute.
Yeah, I would say that feeling of fulfillment, because there's nothing worse to me than, you know, going to bed at night and feeling like I didn't do anything with my day. Mm. You just feel empty inside. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And sometimes when I feel that way, it's just like I continue to dig myself a deeper hole. When if I've lost a fight and I feel that emptiness inside, I reach for the ice cream. And I don't just have a scoop of ice cream. I have the whole tub. And then I still feel empty inside. So then I order a pizza. And then... And I'm trying to fill this void. And the void isn't a physical void. It's a void that, you know, that yearning to make your life meaningful. So I think that would be my why, is to, you know, we are just a blip in this universe. And I mean, I guess you could just see yourself as a blip in the universe and be like, well, whatever, my life is just a blip, so I'm not going to do anything with it. Or you can see it as you're this miracle and you really do have a very, very, very short time in this universe, so you might as well make it worth your while.
I get it. Where do you think you struggled most in your life?
I think I would say self-sabotage is where I've struggled. Within my career, I've had like extraordinary highs, and then I somehow always seem to get very, very low. And I think it's self-sabotage. I've pinpointed it, and it's the fear of success.
Can you think back of a specific time when you experienced this self-sabotage?
Yeah, it's like the fear of not knowing if I'll be able to handle what's to come. And I would say, like, one in specific would be my fight against Rose Namajunas. I was a huge prospect. I was just coming off a huge win versus Paige VanZant. We were the headliner in Sacramento. It was my second fight in the UFC. Everybody was talking about me possibly fighting for the belt. This fight against Rose Namajunas was basically going to determine who got to fight the champ. And I know that I have what it takes to beat Rose. And I was 100% prepared to beat her. I know that I can beat her. But somewhere in my mind, I care too much about her life and her journey. I cared more about her journey than I did about mine. And
why do you think that is?
Because I like Rose. I like Rose as a person. And I think when we're talking about like trying to separate those things, like I'm a very compassionate person. We were friends before. And I respect her as a person. I respect her as a fighter. And I think I gave her too much respect. And maybe not too much respect, but I didn't give myself the credit that I deserved to be in that cage with her.
So what would you do differently if you could replay that?
If I could replay it, I would tell myself that I'm not only doing myself a disservice by fighting her that way, but I'm doing her a disservice by fighting that way, because she deserves the best me that gets into that cage. And so by pulling the reins on myself, I'm not giving her 100% of what I could. I would tell myself that I deserve to be there and that I am a champion. And that whatever happens in the fight, as long as I go in there and I give it my all and I'm 100% dedicated, that I will be satisfied with the outcome.
Well, how did that make you feel coming out of that fight, knowing that you sabotaged yourself?
I think after a fight, after a loss, after a failure, we all make the mistake of overanalyzing the situation. I don't know if everybody does it, but I know that I do it after a loss. I go back to the drawing boards and you try to dissect everything to see what you did wrong. Was it my diet? Was I sick? Did I not train hard enough? Did I train too much? And so there are all these thoughts that go into your mind, and sometimes you can get lost in all of that, because the truth is, I was doing everything right. It was just a split moment of hesitation, and in that hesitation, I lost the fight. And when you're fighting at that high caliber of a stage, that high caliber of an opponent, it's not who is better. It is who makes the first mistake. And I made the first mistake. And I didn't realize that it was something that was going on in my mind until I kind of talked about it with my sports psychologist and this and that. And I'm sure it's a combination of a lot of things, you know. But that split moment of hesitation, in the same way that the power words can explain a whole world, a moment of hesitation can explain a whole nother world. You know what I mean? And that moment of hesitation changed the whole dynamic of the fight, and I lost in the result of that hesitation. And the hesitation was physical, but I hesitated because it was a mental block.
It's such an inner game, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you learn from nowadays?
I mean, you can learn from everybody. I feel like I have a huge stable of fighters that I can learn from, pick their brains. You know, Holly Holm, John Jones, John Dotson. The list will go on and on. My coaches, Coach Winklejohn, Coach Jackson, Coach Izzy, Coach Barata. I have so much knowledge just within the gym that I learned from. But then I also learned from my teammates. I learned from the amateurs that come in and are like fresh at the game and then are still green. I learned from my husband. I learned from my daughter. I think it's important as a martial artist, as an athlete, as a person, to always be a student.
Do you mentor the new people coming in?
You know, it's funny you say that, because I feel like for a long time it wasn't my place to mentor other people because I was still learning. And that's something that I've been able to overcome with my sports psychologist as well, is like kind of like that, if we're going back to the self-sabotage, is like I never felt like I could be a teacher. I never felt like I could give somebody advice because I haven't gotten to that level yet. I haven't become a UFC champion yet. And what my doc would tell me is, do you think that Muhammad Ali still had things to work on when he was the greatest? And 100% he did, you know? My teammates who are champions still have things to work on. So who is to say that you can't be great and still have room for improvement? Is something that I've accepted myself. It's like I never would allow myself to be great in the present moment because I always felt like there were things I needed to work on. But there's nothing wrong with knowing that you're great, but also knowing that you have things to work on. So I would say within this last year, I've kind of adopted that thought and have opened myself up to mentoring some of the amateur teammates that I have. And in doing so, I think that I've been able to grow and develop as a fighter myself.
Yeah, that's a good combination of confidence and humility, mm-hmm. that we have to maintain. And as you said, there's always a level that even for people who they're amateurs, they're just trying to get to where you are. So I think that no matter where you are in your career, you're above somebody, mm-hmm. right? It's like, you know, how do you define an expert or somebody that you could coach? Mm-hmm. Well, anybody that you have, that you know more or have more experience than, then you're the expert.
Yeah. Right?
You know, to most of MMA fighters, they'd love to be in the UFC, and just the fact that you're there makes you an expert and a great mentor for these people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what is the best advice that you've ever given anybody?
You have to really embrace the hard days. You know, you have to understand that those are necessary. It's what gives you character. It's what adds color to your canvas. I don't think I've ever watched a movie that was 100% smooth sailing. It would be boring, I think, that if there was no conflict, if there was nothing that you had to hurdle over. And so when people are dealing with, when the people are struggling and when they're in it, like when they're in the gutter and when it's pouring, that is what determines your character, is how you deal with it, you know? So I think that's what I just try to tell some of my friends when they're having a bad day, is like, this is the moment that determines, you know, whether you go left or right. And that choice is entirely up to you. You're only in control of one thing, and that is yourself.
Yeah, right on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a specific tool that somebody could use to work themselves through that?
I think, again, just rewording it, you know, instead of, man, I had a bad day. I try to tell my teammates all the time, did you really have a bad day? Or did you go with 10 rock stars that are just amazing and have been doing this for 10 years and you've only been doing it for one? Of course you're going to get smashed. Like, of course you're going to get smashed. So how about you just change your perspective on what just happened? Because if you can go through that and come back tomorrow, then you're going to be that much better when you step into the cage against somebody that is at your level, because you just went with somebody that was, you know, two levels above you, and you still came back the next day. So that should give you confidence.
Yeah.
You know, just like trying to change your perspective about the situation. If you know you're going with somebody that's better than you, then maybe your goal shouldn't be to win the round. Maybe your goal should be not to get hit. You know, like, I think it's all on perspective in everything you do in life. So
what are you most excited about now?
I'm excited about the possibilities. I'm excited about what can happen with my mentality being switched over to what I can do versus what, you know, I can't. You know, I'm excited to run into those adversities and to see what I do with them. I'm excited to see what my little one becomes. You know, I've been fighting for so long too that retirement is really around the corner. And so that's going to be a new chapter of my life. Is I've been fighting for over 10 years, probably close to 12 years now professionally.
Wow.
And so that's all I've known. My adult life is fighting. What's next? You know, like, that's scary, but it's also exciting.
Is that a wide open canvas, or do you have things you're kind of looking at? I know you have a gym.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there are any title fights coming up to kind of put a capstone on this career.
I would love to fight for the belt. I would love to become a UFC champion. You know, I want to be one of the pioneers when people are looking back at the UFC and talking about how it was built the way it was built. I want to be in that conversation. So yes, that's in the very near future. And that's first and foremost. Outside of that, Like I said, I think it all started with, you know, me and my brother watching Mortal Kombat and Ninja Turtles and rewinding the fight scenes over and over and over again and watching the fight scenes. So it would be amazing, and it would take everything full circle if I could, you know, do an action movie, if I could live in that imaginary world and inspire kids now, you know.
Would you want to go into acting?
Yeah.
Action hero.
For sure.
Michelle Watterson. Is there a Power Ranger called Karate Hottie?
The Karate Hottie? There isn't, but we can make one.
Yeah, okay.
I just think it would be fun, you know. And my daughter is all about the Avengers and all about superheroes. And I think it would be cool for her to see me on the big screen, you know.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, that teaching. I think there's something so special about being able to change somebody's life in a positive way, you know. And if that somebody is just one person, but it, you know, it only took my instructor, it only took him to change the course of my life, you know. And so if I can only change the course of one person's life, I think it would be worth it.
Where can we learn more about you, and where do we find you, your social media?
Well, I'm probably the most active on Instagram because I like to take pictures, and I think a picture can, you know, relay 1,000 words, but it's just fun. Karate Hottie MMA. And that's all my social media across the board, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And we are really trying to make an effort into building our YouTube channel. So it's Michelle, the Karate Hottie Watterson. And on there we have some vlogs. We're going to start posting more tutorials, instructionals. And I think that my husband and I were curious as to if people would be interested in just hearing us have a conversation and you know, what our conversations are like and what it's like to you know, live a day in our shoes. So we might get a bit into that too.
I think that'd be amazing. That'd be a fascinating show. Do you engage on your own social media?
I do. You know, it's hard because, you know, the more people follow, the more comments you get, and the harder it is to engage with every single one of them, especially when you have to cook dinner for your family and you have to do homework for your little one and then you have to go to training. And so what I try to do is make an effort into going live. And when I go live, just like, you know, answering the questions as they pop in and stuff like that. But
Karate Hottie MMA.
Karate Hottie MMA.
Mm-hmm. On Instagram. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. All right, last question, Michelle. How do you want to be remembered?
I would want to be remembered by somebody that gave their all to everybody. Like any time I meet somebody, I hope they know that I am being 100% honest and genuine with them from the beginning. That you're receiving all of me, all of my love. I guess that would be the biggest thing, is to know that I'm, you know, that I'm trying to give all my love. I don't know.
Well, that's amazing. Michelle, thank you so much.